You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
What would happen if global warming turned Wisconsin into a desert or a virus wiped out most of the human population in a matter of days? Both of those disasters have already occurred by the time Margaret Atwood's latest novel, The Year of the Flood, begins. It follows two women as they navigate this post-apocalyptic world and remember back to the ways life used to be. It's published by Doubleday, and Margaret Atwood, who won the Booker Prize in 2000, joins me now. I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show. Hi.
Hello.
In a review in the London Guardian, Ursula Le Guin calls this an extraordinary novel, but also laments that you refuse to call it in The Handmaid's Tale and Oryx and Crake science fiction. And she speculates that you're worried that the literary bigots will shove you into the literary ghetto.
Well, I don't think it's quite like that at all. I actually did quite a lot of work in this area back when I was a student. And there are two DNA strands of books like this. And the ancestor of one DNA strand is Jules Verne, who wrote stuff like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And the ancestor of the other one is H.G. Wells with things like War of the Worlds and The Time Machine. And Jules Verne was horrified by H.G. Wells. He said, "Mais il invente," but he invents. So
makes things up.
He makes things up, like, in a radically big way. So I belong rather dully to the Jules Verne ancestry of people who don't make up a lot, but push stuff that we've already got on this planet further to see where it might end up, much though I love to read what goes on Planet X, which I believe was where all those devils and angels went after John Milton. They all went to Planet X.
So you call
I can't write it.
You call it speculative
fiction.
Yeah,
just because
I like... Would you call 1984 speculative fiction?
Absolutely. It's speculative. John Wyndham's Death of Grass is speculative fiction. But you can call it science fiction if you like, but just don't expect the dragons and things you get in Star Wars, because, alas, they're not in there.
What elements of modern life are you speculating about in this novel?
I think I'm speculating about two of them. One of them is the fact that we've opened the biggest toy box ever, which is we've unpacked the DNA code and we have the ability to switch bits around, and we are happily doing that. We're re-engineering a lot of things, and we have big plans for ourselves. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Might be a little too late for, I won't say you and me, I'll just say me, but...
I'm getting on in years.
But people have the idea that maybe they can live forever and be a lot better looking, just with a few little tweaks here and there. So there's that whole set of things that is going forward. And once you let one of those things out of the box, it's really hard to get them back in.
And that
the
was,
other one is, of course, okay. climate transformation. And that's going to drive a lot of things as well. But that just rearranges the landscape that I'm dealing with. What really rearranges things is our ability to create new species, including new viruses to which we will have no resistance.
And you have new animal species. But genetically engineered humanoids were a part of Oryx and Crake, weren't they?
Yes.
And is this a continuation or a prequel to that novel?
Okay. It's neither a prequel nor a sequel. It's like the Victorian novel chapters called Meanwhile. And you knew that when you read Meanwhile that you were reading about something that was taking place at the same time as the chapter you just read before, and that sooner or later the people in Meanwhile were going to get together with the other people, as they never failed to do. And so it is with Oryx and Crake and The Year of the Flood. It's Meanwhile, but they get together sooner
so
or later.
So we have Oryx, Crake, and Jimmy in this book as well.
Yes.
And we have institutions like God's Gardeners and the corporations.
Yes.
Were you thinking about when you finished Oryx and Crake, did you feel that you were finished with them? You'd never go back to them?
Yeah, I felt that for about a week. And then I started thinking about, well, what would it be like? Because Jimmy is a person who grows up within the walls of the elite. He's not very good at being an elite. In fact, he's quite bad at it, but that's where he grows up, and he's therefore quite a protected person. So I thought, what would it be like to visit the world that he can only see out the train window? And what would it be like to be among the God's gardeners that he only sees on TV while they're having the Boston coffee party, throwing bales of coffee into the harbor? So I wanted to go to that other part of the map and see what all those people that he could only see from a distance were actually doing.
Well, it's obvious that you're concerned about the carbon footprint and related matters, because which is to some degree what this book is about, because your tour is leaving as small a carbon footprint as possible, isn't it?
That is what we set out to do. In fact, we built a website, which you can find at www.yearoftheflood.com. And part of that website is called Greening the Tour, and another part of it has got a calculator on which you can calculate your own carbon footprint. But we also did the tour as a partial fundraiser for birds and bird conservation activities. And one of my big quests on this tour has been trying to find organic bird-friendly coffee wherever I went.
Now, what is bird-friendly coffee?
Bird-friendly coffee is coffee that is grown in the shade-grown, and also not sprayed with pesticides, because the other kind, they cut down the forest that the birds live in, and then they kill all their food. So there has been a big decline in migratory songbirds. So that's one of the things that we've been doing, and we've been doing them through these strange combinations of book launch and dramatic and musical events like the one we're doing at Symphony Space tomorrow night.
The group that I mentioned earlier, God's Gardeners, are a kind of a cult. And yet, Oh, they're a cult. And yet you share many of their goals.
Well, they are a lot of the people working in the environmental field right now, just pushed a little further on, given their own theology. They do attempt to blend science, religion, and nature. The results are mixed. They do have the characteristics of any group of people. That is, some of them are more annoying than others. Even organizations with very worthy goals sometimes, in fact, always have that feature. So I gave them a theology. I also gave them their own hymns, because they didn't find many in standard hymn books that suited their purposes.
You've written 14 hymns for them.
I have written the texts of those hymns, and somebody else, although I wasn't anticipating this, somebody else then wrote the music to all 14. So that was Orville Stober, and he's on the website too.
This is a website where people can access that, or there's a CD that just came out?
They can download it off the website, or they can get the limited edition CD. And it's been quite a phenomenon, because we've been able to incorporate these hymns, which are not, they're not like your standard hymn, all of them. You don't often get hymns in church or other religious institutions that are dedicated to celebrating moles, for instance, or predators.
Well, they also, God's Gardeners, don't approve of writing, I would assume.
They're afraid of it. Uh-huh. They're afraid of writing anything down, and they're also afraid of cell phones, and they're afraid of computers, because with all of those forms, people can spy on you through them. And the future that they live in is controlled by a meld of corporations and government. You just saw a step taken towards that when the government put a bunch of money into banks and automobile companies. So they don't, they want to live below the radar. They don't want to be accessible in that way.
They call their leaders Adams and Eves, because
yes,
they base, they draw a lot from Judeo-Christian stories, but they also believe in evolution.
Yes, they feel that that is just a method. They don't believe in the limited timeline that some rather, in their view, materialistic fundamentalists do. So they feel that it's a long timeline, and that evolution is a method that God has used, and that part of his reason for doing that was so that human beings wouldn't get puffed up with undue pride.
You are also living a relatively vegetarian life these days.
I themed myself for the tour.
Did you that because you wrote the book? And you?
No, I just felt that if I was going to do this tour, I ought to theme my own behavior to go along with it.
Now, my guess is Margaret Atwood, whose latest novel is The Year of the Flood, which is published by... Who's publishing
this? Nantalese Doubleday, Random House.
One of the protagonists, the two main characters are women, and one of them is a young woman named Wren who grew up with the God Gardeners and survives the waterless flood. Well, this is a flood, the flood of the title, that is not a waterless flood, but I guess it tells us it's like Noah's flood,
God
only without the water?
God says after Noah's flood that he's not going to use water again. But
then
he doesn't
there'll
make
be fire next time.
He doesn't make any other promises.
Oh, because I've always heard there would be fire next time.
Yeah, that's in a different part of the story. It comes much later. It's in the book of Revelations. But just at that Noah moment, and the God's gardeners are mostly interested in those parts that have got animals in them, he says he won't do it with water again. So if there's going to be a destruction, it's got to be waterless. So that's why they call it the waterless flood. They don't quite know what it is, but they suspect that it will be a disease. And that's why they're already building their food supplies that they will be able to access if such a thing happens.
Well, so many people have died already. How did these people survive it?
Well, because they saw it coming and holed themselves up. Mm-hmm. They hid out and avoided contact, which is basically what you do.
The other main character is Toby, an older woman whose parents were quietly murdered by an evil corporation.
I don't know
how much we want to give away the plot here.
Yeah, we suspect that there was something in those vitamin pills.
In this world, how much agency do the women have in their lives, in their sex lives, for example?
Oh, their sex lives. Well, the lower you get towards the bottom of the heap, the less agency you have. This may come as a surprise to you.
Well, I learned all about it with A Handmaid's Tale.
Well, that's very arranged in that society. And in this part of the future that we're in, it's pretty chaotic because we're in a part of society where public space has been abandoned by anybody like police or lawgivers. We're just at the ultimate extreme. We're at the place where nobody cares who you are.
There also are a lot, most of the humans are humanoids, and they turn blue when they want to have sex.
Oh, you mean once the people like us have been sadly diminished in numbers. Yes, the new improved version is minus a lot of the problems that we have. For instance, none of them will ever phone up any of the others on a Friday night and ask for a date and be told that the girl is washing her hair. First of all, they won't have phones. Second, they have sex seasonally, like a lot of mammals. And third, they have sexual signals, like a lot of animals, to let the other ones know that now is the time. So,
although the men always seem to walk around with the color blue, which is their signal. So are you saying something about men?
only when it seems to be the right time for that to happen. So, yes, they do turn blue. It's an interesting study of which parts of animals turn what colors at what times.
Well, chimpanzees turn roseate.
Galada male monkeys have a pink patch on their chests, which when they've been selected to be the guy, that patch turns red. But when they're demoted, it goes back to being pink again.
You have a number of animals that have been crossbred, a lion and a lamb.
Well, it says in Isaiah that the peaceable kingdom will come when the lion lies down with the lamb. So another sect in this book decides they will make that happen, because usually when the lion lies down with the lamb, it eats it. So they wanted to put them together into one animal to solve that problem, but unfortunately it did not turn out to be a vegetarian.
You also have a green rabbit, and you have a rat tongue, and pigs that are semi-rational.
Okay, so the green rabbit exists already on the planet. It was it even predates Oryx and Crake. It was conjured up by a magician who wanted something extra to pull out of the hat. The pigs we're heavily at work on right now to grow extra kidneys and such for us. And when I was writing Oryx and Crake, there was a problem they hadn't solved yet with that, but now they have solved it, so you might get some customized. And we are putting human cortex tissue into other animals to see what might happen with that. So now, as I say, I don't invent a lot.
Oryx and Crake was funnier than this book.
Some people say not. Some people think this one is funnier.
Well, that's my, you know, that's where I was going. My sense is that you see the future as bleaker now than you might have about 5 years ago.
Well, at the end of Oryx and Crake, we have poor Jimmy, who has an infected foot, trying to decide whether to eliminate the last human beings of his own kind that he has come across. That's pretty bleak. Mm. At the end of this, well, we shouldn't talk about endings,
well,
but
they
at
have
the end
similar
of this
endings.
Book, there's a lot more people left standing. Mm. So don't you think that's less bleak?
I guess so.
I've never killed off everybody. It's not like Hamlet.
Well, the good news is that I will be dead by the year 25, which is when this takes place.
Oh, it's only year 25 of the gardener's count. Mm. What if they started counting 10 years ago and you just don't know about it?
Margaret Atwood's latest novel is The Year of the Flood, and it is published by Doubleday and the Nan A. Talese imprint. And it's always a pleasure to have you here, Margaret.
It's a pleasure for me to be here.